All right, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Sir Charles Schulz III as we talk about robotics, drones, what's going on Mars, all those great things next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Sir Charles Schulz III with us. Robotics, drones, and of course Mars. Back to drones for a little bit, Sir Charles. I bought a little tiny helicopter, and I got to tell you, I can't get that thing to fly. It just scoots along the ground and just doesn't lift up. I don't know what I'm doing wrong with the thing.
Give it to a 5-year-old kid and he'll have it airborne before
yeah,
you know it.
Exactly. How small are these robots or drones? How small can they get?
Well, actually, there are groups producing robots that will replace bees and other pollinators right now. So
Jeez.
That gives you an example of how small they can be. They actually have in Harvard what they call the robo-bees, and they're looking at using swarms of them to do pollination if there are colony collapses.
They can actually get that small?
Oh, they can get much smaller. They right now are doing research on something called smart dust. Imagine particles as small as sand that actually have full video capability and movement capability. We're headed there right now.
Do you think they'll ever use those kinds of things to do nefarious things to people?
It's already in the works. You know, they're talking about using incredibly tiny drones, a quarter of an inch to a half an inch long, to carry tiny quantities of explosives so that they can go in groups and target something.
And literally blow somebody up or something?
Quite possibly, yes. It's a military project.
Unbelievable. And how do you defend against something like that?
Well, that's exactly the point. What could you do?
Fly swatter.
You can't bug spray them.
That's right. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Skype to get things going. Raul is with us in New York. Hi there, Raul. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Good to have
Very
you with us.
A fascinating subject that is exploding worldwide.
It is.
One question that I'd like to ask you, you almost answered it before, is about nanorobotics. Now, the reason I ask is that children are being, they're being kidnapped and stuff. Is there in the future that the nanorobotics could be used to implant in children so that you know where they will be all the time?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you have tracking chip devices now. I'm sure, Charles, it'll get even more sophisticated.
Well, yes, it will. And even presently, they have RFID tags as small as pepper flakes. And it's been suggested that some people who work in the spy business ingest them and then use them to get entry to certain areas or to pass information along.
What do you think about being chipped? Would you ever be chipped?
I would not. You know, I'm not a piece of livestock. And I think that the real issue here is, when you do something like that, you're basically putting a serial number on yourself. I think humans have more dignity than that.
Are people going to fight that, do you think?
Some will go with it gladly, and others will fight it to the death.
Yeah, I think you're right. What would you call our Social Security number? Isn't that kind of like a chip? It's not embedded in us, of course, but we really can't function without it.
Well, you know, initially the Social Security number was never meant to be used for anything other than government purposes, for Social Security. And its use for other purposes was actually penalized and greatly discouraged. But it has become sort of the de facto ID number anymore. So it's very difficult to say. Things morph in hideous ways over time sometimes.
Mike in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Mike, you're up with us. Go ahead.
I'm so glad you took my call. 25 years listening, right up the street, and this is the topic I just
thank you,
love.
Mike.
Thank you so much. I've been trying to get to Siri's back door for 2 years. Too much time on my hands. I have had her respond to the same question several different ways. But do you know any of the back doors to Siri at all, or maybe the listeners do?
Gosh.
No, I don't. To be honest, I have not used Siri enough, other than to say, let me know when the laundry is done. I tend not to share a lot of information with bots that are remotely operated and controlled, because there is the possibility of a lot of that information being harvested and used for other purposes.
For sure.
But, you know, that's the downside. The upside is we're going to see those things happening at a chip level pretty soon, so you'll be able to have devices that have that sort of intelligence built into them without having to be online. And that's when you'll be a lot more, perhaps, let's say, less worried about the effects of using them. But I don't know any of the back doors. I'm sure a lot of people do.
Mike, email Loren Weinstein. You can find him on our search section at coasttocoastam.com. Loren Weinstein. And he might be able to help you there, too. Lots going on in that field as well. Next up, we go to Tom, first-time caller in Tennessee. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tom.
George.
Hey there.
Charles, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Quite an honor for me. I've got a question and a comment. Do you think that we'll be proactive and embed some kind of preventive software or something in the drones and robots to keep them from being used in any kind of illegal activity by private individuals?
That would be extremely difficult to do. It's kind of like saying, can we make hammers so that you can't use them to commit a crime? Because drones are such universal tools, you're going to have some level of autonomy at some point. And when they reach the level that the AI in them understands what you're doing, then you might have a chance of doing that. But even smart people can be fooled. So I don't see any easy way to make them crime-proof.
Sir Charles, with drones, do you see the day that that drone could hit a plane or do something like that?
Well, that's already been done. There are cases where people have flown drones into the flight paths of planes and had collisions. So this is exactly the reason for FAA registration.
On purpose, too, these things, not just accidents.
It's quite possible that a couple of the collisions were on purpose. A couple of them certainly were accidents. But, yeah, you know, sometimes it's hard to prove intent, but sometimes it's pretty obvious.
How big are drones? What's the biggest size drone that's out there now?
It's like a full-size plane, right? You know, presently they come in all sizes and shapes. The biggest ones I know of that were made were B-17 Stratofortresses, 8 of them.
Wow.
Turned into drones back at the end of World War II to collect data on nuclear explosions because they could load instrumentation in them and then nobody would be injured or radiated when the explosions went off. So they can be any size, literally.
Next up, we go to Justin in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Justin, thanks for calling.
Hey, this is actually kind of two-part. Number one, I mean, earlier you asked Charles if you know, all of this sort of technological proliferation is a good thing, and he said he thinks it is. Number one, I'm having a hard time seeing how this doesn't pose a lot more threat to humanity at large. And with that said, also, do you see an avenue for the potential of sort of the everyday human being to somehow seize the authority to take control over the proprietary aspects of these things so as they can't be used in nefarious ways by, you know, government organizations and things like that without the people having some control or power over it?
I can see that an individual drone or a set of drones that you have built and programmed, you could have pretty much absolute control over. If you're getting something from a third party, then you have no idea what's going on in it. But what I can also see is that drones could be used to do some very positive things. Imagine a club in a school or a college using drones to clean up a dirty lot and then plant it, seed it properly. Imagine drones being used to clean up the landfills, as I mentioned earlier. There are so many positive aspects to this technology. And yes, there are dangers in everything we develop, but we have to be smart enough to try and put some safeguards in place, and that certainly will come. But there's no way to make anything 100% safe ever.
Okay, let's go east. Brian is in Indiana. Hi, Brian. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you, Sir Charles? Good evening.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hey, sorry if I have a cold and fighting off here, but you know this whole technology stuff, man. I have 1,000 questions, and I think this will open up the vindictiveness and the evilness in mankind. Like Justin said, you know, yeah, there's a lot of good things to go to, clean up the garbage. You know, you mentioned an artificial heart, stuff like that. But I have a two-part question.
All right.
The 22 million people, the number that you gave to the people over in Asia that's going to be displaced, I feel what's going to happen to them, they're going to try to flood our country in 5 to 10 years, you know, but our country is going to be hit by this technology, and our American workers will be displaced. So,
absolutely.
So all of a sudden, you got 100 million displaced workers around the world. What's going to happen with them? And my second question is, what do you know about the driverless semi truck that went? They ran a test on it maybe about a month ago or so. And I'm a Teamster member, so this concerns me very much.
Absolutely.
About my job.
It was full of beer. I think it had Budweiser in it, Sir Charles.
Well, I hadn't heard about that. I have to admit, I think my head's been in the laboratory quite a bit lately.
Yeah, it was a big semi.
Okay.
Driverless semi.
Oh, yes, the driverless semi that crashed. Okay. That does come back to mind. I read it and thought, well, that's interesting. But, you know, we're going to see more of this. And the fact is, the only way you're going to get no crashes with driverless vehicles is if all of them are driverless. And we're certainly apparently headed that way. Now, as far as the labor displacement issue goes, you know, I've seen recently pushes to put people on a basic minimal income. And when I see the growth of robotic technology, what I see is the potential for us to have an economy where the machines do all the labor and produce everything we need. I just don't see immediately an easy path to get us there. But you can bet that when all of the labor is done by robotics and by AI, that there will be a struggle to figure out how everybody is going to live with that.
Who's driving it? Not in terms of technology and computers, but individuals. Who's driving it that way?
You know, companies, of course, see great profit to be made by selling machines and by selling lots of them. But we're at a curious point here. These are machines that, for the most part, are not productive machines like robotic welders or weld diggers or any of those sorts of things. They are, at the most part right now, entertainment devices. What's going to really happen here is hobbyists are going to be the driving force because they are creating new ideas and new applications for them all the time. And a lot of the research, of course, does start in universities and large companies, but the most seminal research appears to be happening in the garage.
Oh, really? Like the Stephen Jobs and Wozniaks?
Exactly. You know, it's those things that come up behind you that you never suspected that have the most astounding impact on us all over the long term.
Next up, we go to Landon in Riverside, California. Hi, Landon. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hey, I'm a commercial pilot out here in Southern California.
Oh, cool.
And I've also got a Form 333 exemption. But I was wondering, you know, the aviation industry is hitting in 2020. We're getting ADS-B, which is a, you know, kind of a system where air traffic and or airplanes themselves can talk to one another. And right now, the current means of traffic avoidance is, you know, the aircraft bounce the transponder ping off the aircraft to the ground receiver back to the other aircraft. It'd be so much quicker. I was wondering if drones, as they're flying around, will be able to have that same technology if they're advancing to that in such a way to allow them to see other aircraft and, you know, avoid without having the, you know, the human input to avoid it as well. On these
actually,
obvious, you know, the DJI.
Actually, yes. Yes, they could. And the reasoning is very simple. Many drones already have GPS and inertial navigation systems built into them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to function as well as they do. The only thing you need then is a packet network, so they're always communicating with each other, and they will act as one. Now, you mentioned that, and this has direct bearing on something that Intel is doing now. They have flown flights of like 500 drones, each carrying different multicolor LEDs, and they do them in formation. And they are trying to replace fireworks and firework displays using drones. So this is exactly the sort of technology you're talking about.
You know, and it's going to have some kind of guidance, internal guidance system too, don't you think?
Absolutely. You see, drones are learning how to work cooperatively like ants or bees. And this is one of the big points I was trying to make tonight, and we have so little time for all these astounding developments, as you understand, but this is important. Drones are getting smarter, and they're working like hives of individuals. And so this is where we're going to see their greatest strength. Like ants or like bees, not one of them is smart, but all together, the group knows what's happening.
Charles in Texas, welcome to the show. Hi, Charles.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. Okay, hold on. Sir Charles here.
Charles to Charles. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Charles to Charles. Well, the thing is, I'm listening to you guys, and I know that Sir Charles is still probably connected with defense industry, the military-industrial complex, whatever it may be. And I'm sitting there thinking, listening to these ideas that would be developed for Mars exploration development. And, of course, naturally, we could see that all these things could be also applied to the Earth. What I'm finding is that very few people seem to want to discuss the sort of combination of things that might need to be done. For example, Ellen Brown could probably tell us a national bank would help to fund a lot of this stuff, as long as it was prohibited from spending on the military-industrial complex, I suppose. But in other words, if it were to provide us, say, a guaranteed annual income or a universal basic income, that would be one part of it, because providing that would actually shift the economy in a different direction, away from just spending trillions of dollars on military stuff and defense-related stuff. But it would also, and it would produce goods instead of destruction. So it seems to me that there hasn't been a lot of good review of what used to be discussed back in the 60s, the cybercultural revolution, where they were talking about it. A lot of people, high-level people, would get together and talk about how we were going to have 15-hour work weeks and we were not going to, what are we going to do with all the leisure? And instead, all that money power has gone to the money powers all the value in the world, it seems to have been shifted over into their control.
That's
and
right.
I'm just wondering if you guys have some answer that will actually result in almost a utopia on Earth, in using, of course, artificial intelligence, robotics, drones, all that sort of stuff, for the good. Because we need to get some control over this technology to use it for good, and not just for destruction and bombing people and all sorts of craziness is sort of unnecessary.
You're right, Charles. We're going to hit the brakes, Sir Charles, but let's think about that when we come back. Can all this technology be finally used for the good? Because right now it just seems like it's being used to reduce labor power and everything else, and that's not a good thing. Sir Charles' website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll be back with final calls in a moment. Well, next hour, we're going to talk ancient aliens with the creators of that incredible program, so make sure you're part of the show. We're going to come back in a moment to take final calls with Sir Charles Schultz III as well. So, Sir Charles from Texas wanted to know when all this technology is going to be used for the common good, not the common bad.
Absolutely, and that's the big question. Some of it is happening right now, but it takes time. And a lot of times we find that things are controlled by regulation. So just as the registration for drones has to be done now, certainly other technologies will appear that they'll want to regulate or control. And I think that the hardest thing is getting rid of the stumbling blocks. Maybe one of the beginnings would be to define the desire to control others as a mental illness.
Yeah, but I don't know. There just seems to be something steering this, pushing it toward just evil ways when it shouldn't be.
Well, drones initially were used for warfare and for surveillance, and so it's no wonder that some of that cloud still hangs over them. We still have the Project Alpha going on to get a robotic army in this country by 2025, and many other issues are still in the way. I think that what will happen, we need to start a movement to get this technology doing something positive that people can see and agree on, and cleaning up the oceans, planting trees, cleaning up the landfills. Those are really great starting places.
So if you were in your backyard lounging around and your neighbor sent a drone over and was just playing around, taking videos, and he could see you, would you feel as if your privacy was invaded?
To a degree, I would. I think that all of us are aware that most anybody can look over a fence, but when something's flying over your house, it's a little bit different. Many of us have some reasonable expectation of privacy, and that's actually a legal term used to define whether your privacy is valid or not, a reasonable expectation. Many people have come up with systems that will stop drones, such as other drones carrying a net to snag them, or RF systems that jam them and make them fall to the ground. But they shouldn't take out a gun and start shooting them. That, some people have resorted to it. It generally does not end well.
No, for the drone or whomever, right?
Exactly.
Jim in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks. Nice to talk to you again, George.
Sure thing.
My concern has been voiced by a couple of other callers who called in, but I do have a little bit beyond that. And one other thing I thought of while I was listening to your show tonight, you missed what would have been a great bumper song, man. You should have played iRobot I forgot his name now.
Well, we played Mr. Roboto, so that's not bad.
Okay. All right. But anyway, that's a digression. Picking up on this theme of, you know, that this seems to be fraught with a lot of bad stuff. You know, it's like, yeah, I recognize that there's all the good things that have been mentioned, you know, being able to do tedious, menial labor and dangerous stuff that, you know, gosh, we don't want to risk somebody's life doing that. You know, we can make a robot do it and all that. But I just, you know, some of the best inventions mankind started out with, you know, Nobel's dynamite, you know, was invented with the greatest idea of, you know, it would help end war, and look what it's led to, you know. I just can't see how eventually this is not going to wind up leading to being weaponized and grotesquely misused, and that all that will far overshadow the good stuff out of not having to clip your own hedges anymore.
Well, you know, you're right about that, Jim. Now, it has been weaponized, of course. How many times have we seen video pictures of drones flying over ISIS strongholds or places in Afghanistan or Iraq and blowing them up from afar? How far are the controllers of the drones, Sir Charles, anyway?
Usually they're within a few miles, but sometimes they're hundreds of miles away. And one of the things that I've got to point out is everything goes through a phase where it ends up being a weapon or something, and drones are right there at the forefront. But what we do is we focus on what we can do positively with the technology. We can't let ourselves get mired down in the fact that the evil of the world persists. We have to do the right thing, and we can turn this into something very positive. Absolutely, it's going to be weaponized worse than we see, and dark days are coming for a lot of these things. But what we can do as individuals is stand up for what is right and what is good, and we make advancements that are positive to help other people. That's all we can do.
George in Pennsylvania. Good morning, George. Thank you for calling.
Yes, Dr. Schultz, I was lucky enough to run into a fellow here out of Carnegie Tech by the same name, just put a Z on it, Schultz. And I wanted to ask you, I challenged him to build an anti-gravity machine. He did it in 2 weeks and had it levitating.
Wow.
And
wow.
He had a Volkswagen. He put a construct around it, said he could get to the moon in 3.4 days, meaning Mars is only 30 days away. If you, which I challenge you, to use double rotation, monofields, two coils for back and front EMF, balance them out so that they keep a monofield. And you can do it on 48-inch discs with a couple Lazy Susans. And it'll lift up close to 700 pounds. Of course, if you make the machine, you have to use three of the motors for control, one for stabilization. But I think you'll understand what I'm talking about. I call it the fourth rule of Newton. It's balanced imbalance or continuation in the fields to knock out one leg of space-time.
Well, out of my pay grade, what do you think?
It's a very interesting concept. I have to admit, right now I don't have the facilities to even attempt such a thing. It's a very interesting thought. I know that if you could neutralize gravity in any way, then, and right now we do it with rockets or with propellers or jet engines, but if you could neutralize gravity in any way, you certainly could get all over the solar system in a very short period of time. So, you know, it's certainly something worth pursuing. If your friend built this system, he should be applying it.
Absolutely.
Great things that can be done with it.
He should. George, send me an email with some contact information. We want to talk further with your friend if he's prepared to go public. That would be astounding, Sir Charles.
Well, it certainly would. I think we can all imagine some of the possibilities.
Eric in California, your turn, Eric. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I had an idea of how drones could be used for the common good. They could be used to fight forest fires. If millions of drones got together and were equipped with a tiny scoop to scoop up water, and they could fly like in a giant flock or from the water source over to the forest fire, just like one helicopter does now, picking
yeah.
up a big chunk of water. But if millions of drones could cooperate in a swarm and all pick up, say, a kilo of water and just fly continuously back and forth to the water source, it'd be like pouring a constant stream of water on the forest fire.
That's possible. That's actually not a bad idea, but there's something to consider. In an operation like that, when you have a larger system doing it, you generally have less loss and more efficiency. So while drones certainly could probably do that, you're better off using a larger machine. Probably a drone that weighs a couple of hundred pounds or so would probably be the minimum that you'd want to do that with. But I would also suggest humbly that there is a system right now that you ignite it and it pops and it smothers a fire. That might actually be a better way, if we could carry that with the drones, of targeting specific areas of a forest fire.
So, Charles, I heard that the Chinese are trying to develop millions of drones to be used in military applications. Millions of them.
Well, that wouldn't be surprising at all. I mean, think about the fact that we're right at the edge of being able to literally print them with a complex 3D printer system, turn them out by the millions right now. Millions of drones could do things that you couldn't do any other way. They certainly could be used for carrying a lot of information for surveillance or for spying. They also certainly could dig tunnels, move materials. As I quoted earlier, there was a system with six small drones that weigh 17 grams each, and that's like the weight of three nickels, could pull a 4,000-pound car using gecko wheels, sticky wheels. Millions of drones could be put to almost any purpose. I would like to think that if we were smart, we'd be making just as many that could counter those threats and also do positive things for us when they're not involved in defense or warfare.
What's the power source for these little drones? Tiny batteries?
Most of them use lithium-ion polymer batteries, very tiny batteries. Some have actually been built that work on a beam of microwave power so they don't have to carry their power source. So there are ways of producing drones that will work on remote power and don't have to rely on batteries.
Because batteries would weigh them down, would it not?
Well, not only that, even though you can make some very light batteries, you wouldn't have a long lifespan or flight time with some of the batteries we have. So if you had a beam of microwave energy or laser energy powering the drones remotely, then you wouldn't have to worry about battery life and flight time.
Kathleen in Texas, east of the Rockies. Hi, Kath. Go ahead.
Hey, hi there. I can't believe I got through one on my birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm just older. Wiser. Older. My question is, how far has robotics been developed for prosthetics?
You know, a lot of people go to the benchmark, which they think of as the Luke Skywalker hand. We are actually well past that at this point. I think what we're going to see in the near term is, now that we know that we can fuse biological and robotic material together, and we can even 3D print organs and tissues, we're going to see transhuman organs that have some biological characteristics and some robotic characteristics. We do have the ability already to interface artificial and prosthetic limbs with the brain. So as this technology develops, we're going to eventually see organs and limbs being replaced by hybrid cyborg machinery, and it's going to lead to some extremely incredibly realistic and lifelike organs and limbs that have better capabilities than biological ones.
Wayne is in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne. It's your turn.
Good evening, gentlemen, George.
Hey.
Sir Charles, you mentioned von Neumann, John von Neumann, earlier, and I read a book about the Eldridge, and I believe that he was involved with Tesla and Einstein in developing that radar invisibility,
cloaking,
the teleportation. Yeah. Can you give us any insights on that?
I have heard about some connections, but I don't know, and I couldn't substantiate them. A lot of people are...
And he's talking about the Philadelphia experiment.
Exactly. The Eldridge was the ship that reportedly was used in the experiments that led to the story of the Philadelphia experiment. And there's a couple of mixed schools on that. There are some interesting bits of information that seem to support it and others that seem to absolutely deny it. I don't even hold an opinion on it at this point. I do know that a lot of brilliant thinking went into cloaking and radar invisibility, and that they've often discovered things that they didn't expect along the way. We did some research that back in the early 80s when I was working in defense. And the things you see today, I can assure you, the things you see today are at least 30 years older than you think they are. But I couldn't give you any valid opinion about that.
Lisa's in Salem, Oregon. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. Huge fan, George.
Thank you.
Anyways, this when your guest was talking about the robotic bees, it made me remember something that happened to my ex-husband and I in 2009. We swatted a fly, and it had a little piece of metal, like very, very tiny, like a sliver. And I've never even told anyone about it because it sounds so nuts, but I was just...
Like a little antenna sticking out of it?
It was like in it. It was like a toothpick, but like much smaller than a toothpick. But very.
It was metal.
Yeah, it just made me. Jeez. A robotic bumblebee.
But it was a fly, though, right?
What?
It was a real fly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are cases when organisms will be injured early in their life cycle, and they will encyst the material that they're stuck with. And you might have simply run across a very rare case where a fly, when it was young in a maggot form, might have been stabbed with a small piece of metal and then simply grew around it.
Oh, that's a good point. That's right.
So, you know, there wouldn't be much of a reason that far back to expect that this was some sort of a robotic device or something, or some sort of a, let's say, a remote-controlled fly. Now, it's not out of the question entirely, but I think it would be very, very unusual to find something like that, and that there are some actually pretty pedestrian explanations for finding a metal sliver in a fly.
Sir Charles, give us some quick predictions over the next 10 years. How do you see robotics?
I see robotics is going to finally reach that plateau we've been looking for, where we'll find plenty of machines doing jobs nobody wants to do, to the point where it's eventually going to end up displacing a lot of people. The big things are going to be more realistic and biological materials, the cooperative drones, and the ability to get large numbers of machines working autonomously on jobs, such as, again, pollinating flowers and cleaning up trash on the highway and doing the ocean cleanup. I see that we're going to have, finally, what appears to be intelligent action out of these machines within the next 5 to 10 years very easily.
Let's just hope it doesn't go awry.
Let's hope.
Brian in Aberdeen, Texas, let's get you in. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, real quick. Robots and AI operate off of principles of logic. I've always wondered, what logical reason would a robot or an AI have to take over the world? And I'll take my answer off air.
All right, sounds like a little Isimov.
Yeah. Okay, well, first of all, you can actually program robots to do anything, and that could be their logical reason. But if a machine developed enough intelligence or was given enough intelligence to understand the jobs it was given, it might at some point realize it doesn't want to do those jobs either. After all, if a machine is smart enough to understand what you're telling it, what you want it to do, maybe it wouldn't want to do that. If it has self-determination, it might simply say, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. We have to really consider, if we make intelligent machines, that's essentially slavery of a form.
Sure is. Sir Charles, for people who want to track your work, find out where you are, give us your website, please.
SchultzLaboratories.com is the primary one, and my new podcast, TalkUniverse.org, is the other one.
Super. And how often do you do that?
I do a weekly podcast on science and technology and how it affects our society.
Excellent.
Every Wednesday.
Okay. Thanks, Sir Charles. Always a pleasure talking to you. Sir Charles Schultz III. Up next, well, you know, our television program, The Ancient Aliens, that is seen quite regularly on the History Channel. They're going to do it for another year, and in a moment, you'll hear from the creators of that show.